A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello everyone, welcome to Deuce Bags. This edition we are going to look at the Wimbledon review. Joining me today is Shankar. Unfortunately, Bijan couldn't make it to this podcast. Hey Shankar, Wimbledon is done. So we did a show midweek where we predicted what would happen. Second week, did it go according to what you thought it would?
Yes, well, at least the men's went completely to prediction. I think Federer was the favorite coming in before the tournament. He played like the favorite. He was never threatened, and he won pretty comfortably and pretty impressively. On the women's side, I think Bijan said we had, I don't remember who we called. I think we had four. We had Halep, Muguruza, Venus, and somebody else. So I remember thinking Venus would go deep because she was the only one who had grass court experience. And it happened like that. I mean, the Spaniard won. She did well. So I think we were not too far off.
So just looking at the men's side first, so Cilic made the final. So obviously you could say it was one-sided, but unfortunate for Cilic that his injury just took toll of him and he couldn't put up a fight. But otherwise, surprised with how Cilic made it to the finals?
A little bit, but not very. I think last year he had match points against Federer in the quarterfinals and he really should have won that match. Federer somehow snuck it out. And I don't think any match he played, he wasn't expected to win too. It just he didn't run into Nadal. I don't know how that would have turned out. But the way he's playing, I would have said he probably could have beaten Nadal as well on grass. So he's a good player. He blows hot, blows cold. When he's moving well and he's got his power going, he can be very, very intimidating. So not a huge surprise. Obviously, he was helped by Nadal losing and Murray losing. So, but given the draw he had in the end, I think every match he played, he was expected to win, and he did, except for the final, of course.
Indeed. Also, let's look at Federer. Second time he's ever won a Grand Slam without dropping a set. Has he actually played better? Do you think he's getting better with age, or the breaks, as we discussed in the last part, the one which we did during the French Open, that the breaks are actually aiding his recovery and he's reaching to peak form when it matters?
I think he played better in Australia. And the reason he played better in Australia was because he had to play better. I don't know how this is going to sound, but he did not even have to play his best tennis to win this tournament. He was never pushed. He was serving incredibly well. That I must say off the bat. He fully deserved to win. But honestly, if you asked him himself, I think he would have been surprised by how straightforward almost all the matches were. But he had a decently tough draw. I mean, Dimitrov, Raonic, Burdick, Cilic, it's not easy, all big guys. But they're all, I mean, except for Cilic, who we'll give him a pass because he had an injury. But they're all predictably fallible, I'll say. Dimitrov, Raonic, a couple of returns in, you know that Federer is going to win the point if he gets the ball back over the net, and he serves well enough that they get intimidated. So I think he's playing really well. He's somehow the strategy of skipping months and then coming back and playing is working for him very well. He played well. He won without losing a set, but he could play even better.
Lots of people actually, the common thing on social media was this, lots of Federer fans actually said this is the best he's played, but your opinion seems that he's in, you know, you would say he was in third gear then?
second gear, not third gear. His serving was incredible. I mean, nobody had a whiff on his serve. And I don't know how he does it. He serves big. He serves aces. Very few double faults. Whenever he's down 15, 30, 30, 40, whatever, he comes out with a big serve. His serving is ridiculously good. So he played very well. I mean, the Federer fans will see it as a perfect performance. And it's very hard to argue with the guy who goes through the whole tournament not dropping a set that it's not a perfect one. But what I mean is he can get pushed and even elevate his game. He never had to do it. But yeah, he's unbelievable.
Indeed, indeed. Let's also look at Nadal. So you actually pre-tournament said you don't think he will win it and he might lose. And he did indeed lose. So what do you make of the tournament as a Nadal fan? From his perspective, how would he rate this tournament?
Well, he was very disappointed in his post-match after losing to Muller. He was very disappointed. He talked a very modest game, which he characteristically does. After every round, he said, "I've won one round. I'm happy to be back." And I thought he would have troubles from the third round, where he played that Karen Khachanov, that giant 21-year-old guy who has a big game. But his game is not all there yet. But I knew Muller was dangerous because Muller's game is made for grass. And I think before the tournament, he had played the most on grass this year and won the most number of wins. I think two tournaments he reached the semi, so he had 8 wins or 10 wins or something like that. So I knew that Muller was dangerous, but I kept watching it. I kept expecting Muller to, you know, blink in the face of Nadal. And Nadal is deeply disappointed. He used the words, he said he had a chance to do something special. So I think he really felt he could reach the semis or win or something like that. But on grass, I mean, some of his weapons are taken away. He has less time. A big server with a confident game will put him in tough situations. And although it was heartbreaking to lose that match, there was never a stage where he was leading. So probably fair result in the end.
I actually remember Bijan on a WhatsApp group saying that Muller being left-handed takes out some parts of the strength of Nadal's game. Would you agree? Left-handed being, did it matter according to you?
Yes, that made a difference too. But Muller is really good on grass. I don't know if you watched him. His serving was, I mean, Nadal could not get a read on Muller's serve almost all the way through the match, I would say. Him being Nadal, he found a way to break in the third and fourth set. But once Muller kind of centered himself and balanced himself, those serves were just perfect. He was volleying well. He was covering the court. He was handling Nadal's ground strokes with tremendous ease. And probably Nadal was at did not have that usual advantage that he has against right-handers. Yes, I think Bijan and you were right about that. But it just complete game, really. The best match of Muller's life, no doubt.
And quite expected that he gets knocked out soon after that, right?
Yeah, well, that's the curse. The curse of Rafa, they say. Everybody who's beaten him in the last 5 years since 2011 has lost in the next round. So maybe the next year, people will look at that curse and say, nobody wants to beat Nadal. So that, but yeah, it was just such a big five-set match, and a lot was taken out of it. And then he took Cilic to five sets, and somebody had to lose there. Cilic played a little better there, yeah.
And then we have not yet discussed about the unfortunate Djokovic injury. He looked good. I would say he looked kind of nearing, not his best. Obviously, his best is somewhere else. I don't think we are going to see his real best anytime soon. But considering his performances this year, he seemed to be recovering towards the peak of his performances for this year at least. What do you make of his tournament though?
Yeah, I think he would have been very hopeful coming in. You see, he lost badly in Paris and people were saying he should take a break. He's the worst he's played. I said it was the worst he's played in a long time. But he showed that he wanted to get back on the horse immediately. He took a wild card. He entered Eastbourne. He won that tournament. So, and he's brought in Agassi, he brought in Anchit. So all his signs are of somebody who wants to do better. And you're right, he did play better and better as the tournament went through. And it's very unfortunate that he was injured. I mean, the odds were that he would beat someone like Berdych, who is, I think it's 25-2 or something, the head-to-head. But he admitted that he had he's had this injury for a year and a half. So I think he's probably going to have to take some time off, recover, do what it takes. At this point, if I had to predict, I think he'll skip the US Open. He might skip the rest of the year, seeing what it did for Federer. But yeah, it's unfortunate for him.
I think all things, as you said, helped indeed Federer have that tournament he hated. So let's just summarize the men's side, Shankar. Who would you term as you would say, the biggest disappointment from the men's side in terms of the performance at Wimbledon?
Oh, the biggest disappointment.
I would be tempted to say Wawrinka, but indeed, in the last pod, you said his record at Graz is nothing to boast about.
Yeah, Wawrinka would have to be the biggest disappointment just because he's number five. He came off a final in Paris, but he lost to an up-and-coming youngster who was expected to make big waves in the game. If you take that out, I think the top guys did okay. I mean, Murray clearly was carrying an injury, apparently, in a tour meeting before Wimbledon. There was the ATP Tour Council meeting where it was a 6-hour meeting and he couldn't even sit down. So he was suffering and he really tried. Because it was Wimbledon, he wanted to try, understandably. And he was so close to beating Querrey in straight sets. I mean, if he had won that second set, he was up a break and 5-3. If he had won that second set, what's to say he wouldn't have won in three sets, and then who knows? But so I think he did everything he could. Djokovic, unfortunate, the injury rules him out. Nadal probably would have backed himself to beat Muller. So maybe given everyone talking about him and building him up in this tournament, that he hadn't lost a set since the beginning of the French, all that stuff. Maybe Nadal's a big disappointment, but McEnroe commentary said that of all the fourth round opponents, the guy that none of the top guy wants to play is Muller because his game is so slippery. So disappointments, I would say I was most disappointed by Dimitrov and Raonic, I think. Just the lack of fight they put in. You know, they just kind of showed up and I could predict what was going to happen and they didn't surprise me even once.
Didn't Raonic have a good Wimbledon last time? He made semifinals, is it? If I remember, was it Wimbledon?
No, he reached the finals last year. He beat the semis and he reached the finals. But last year he showed more fight. Even in last year's Australian Open, he took Murray to five sets before getting injured. So somehow this year he's had a lot of losses, loss of form, less matches. Federer was very kind in his post-match. He's saying that Milos is where I was last year. He's not sure and that's why he's not playing well. But I mean, I called it. I told some friends of mine that this is what was going to happen. He'll serve three aces a game, four games in a set. And one game, he let himself get broken. And he does. I think mentally, they're not there, these guys, the next generation who are playing these top four guys. And I'll include Wawrinka as well, the top five guys. They don't really believe they can beat these guys, you know. And they blink first every time, almost every time.
That's not so good to hear. Actually, was it Federer who was saying that the ranking point system isn't fair? And that these guys, if they beat the top four, should get more points. Something like that I read yesterday or today, I believe. What did you happen to read this bit as well?
Yeah, I saw the interview on YouTube. He came back the day after winning. He won on Sunday, so he went to the ball and all that. On Monday, he came back to the club and there was an interview. So what he said there was, when he was starting in the 90s, if you bet a top player, you get more points. Like at Paris, he was playing Pat Rafter and he was supposed to get 90 points if he beat Rafter, because in Grand Slams, you get double points for beating players ranked between 2 and 5. He says, here what happens is that even if someone like a Dimitrov beats a Murray, which he's done in the Slams a couple of times, he doesn't get any great points. And as it is, none of these guys seem to have what it takes to win 5 matches or 6 matches or 7 matches in a row. So they're not getting rewarded enough. And Federer made a point. He said, Murray reached the quarterfinals and he gets 350 points and I win the finals and I get 2,000 points. The gap is too large. It rewards the people who win tremendously, but it should not. The reward should be better spread and trickle down more. So, yeah, he made that point. If you do that, then these guys will get bumped up in rankings and that will have a knock-on effect on their careers and their confidences. So he has a point.
Talking rankings, Federer, the latest rankings, he's moved up to 3 now.
Yeah, I think it's Murray, Nadal, Federer, right?
Federer, yes. Djokovic has dropped to 4. And so Federer seems to have qualified for the year end already, because he's obviously won 2 slams. He has enough points on the board. So looking good this season for him. We did talk about the first week. But in terms of the whole tournament, if you look, biggest upset, what would you term? Which match would you say is the biggest or the biggest giant killing of the tournament?
Again, Muller beating Nadal, I think, especially the way he started 2 sets to love. And then when it came to 2 sets all, everyone said, okay, fine, now Rafa has this. He knows how to win from here. And Muller said, no, just didn't give up, and he played so well, and it went to what 13-11 or 15-13, I think. So that was huge. That was the big shock in the men's side. I think the one result that they didn't expect before the match, and at even somewhere during the match, they did not expect it when it was two sets all. So I would say that's the biggest upset.
Indeed. So let's we've discussed enough of the men's section. Let's just look at the women's section. One of the top picks we picked, and then Muguruza indeed beating Venus Williams in the finals. What a contrasting two Grand Slams for Muguruza. French Open ended in tears, literally, due to the partisans about Paris is always known to be like that. And then coming to Wimbledon, winning Wimbledon. Last year she was finalist, right? So getting better.
No, she reached the final 2 years ago.
Two years ago, Wimbledon finalist. Last year, French Open winner. This year, absolute contrast in French Open, and then followed up with this. It's been a total roller coaster for Muguruza. So how do you rate her tournament?
Excellent. I saw I think three of her matches I saw. Her match against Kerber was marvelous. I think it was probably the best match of the tournament, men or women's side. Halep and Konta was also a great match. Muguruza has been pegged right from when she won Paris last year as somebody who can win a lot of slams, because apparently she has great self-confidence. And I read somewhere that after losing the French to Mladenovic and the way the crowd treated her, she was very angry and she was very upset. And she told somebody near her, she said, I have to do something good. And she came here, and before Wimbledon, she played in Eastbourne and she lost 6-love 6-1 to Barbara Strikova. I mean, talk about misleading people, but she won only one game. And then she comes in here, she never takes a backward step. And she dominates the second set against a 5-time champion. I don't think I've seen anyone apart from Williams or maybe Kvitova to play like this on grass. And she looks very good, I'll say. And mentally, she's there. She's got tremendous confidence. She doesn't take a backward step. I think she believes that she will now kind of, you know, build on this. She will not settle with two. And maybe that's good.
Do you see her as someone like an all-quota, that is she has the game for all surfaces?
Yes, I always think that's more common among the ladies, in that
ladies,
you don't
yes,
get
indeed.
Yeah, you don't have a if a woman player is really good, she generally does well on all surfaces, because once they get to the top in the women section, and I don't want to sound sexist, but they mentally dominate a lot of people at the lower levels. And if you win one set 6-1, already you're halfway through the match, and before the other person knows that the match is over. So I think Muguruza, yes. She's the first person to have ever defeated both Serena and Venus in Grand Slam finals. The fact that she's played here once and lost Serena, and the fact that she beat Serena last year, those two would have been huge confidence boosters for her when she went into this match against Venus. And full credit to her, really. She was down two set points. And had she lost the first set, who knows, this could have gone totally different. But she didn't. And they only play. You only look at what the results are, and she played really well in that second set. I don't think Venus played that poorly in the second set. The common narrative is that Venus lost some gas, got tired. I didn't see that much of a loss in speed and all from Venus. But I think Venus kept expecting Muguruza to be like kind of overpowered or something like that. And Muguruza just stepped up to the line and gave as good as she got, and she really took every chance in that second set.
And since you mentioned Venus Williams, how would you see it? A lot of, as we discussed in the previous, a lot of off-court issues. And then she made it to the finals. The ladies' side is, it was gravitating towards the younger generation. But it's, again, last couple of years, we have seen a lot of players who are 30 or above making finals, winning finals. We have seen that trend also coming back. So how would you rate her tournament, considering the off-field issues?
Excellent, excellent. I mean, we talk about Nadal and Federer and Serena, but Venus has had two Grand Slam finals this year, and that's pretty good for anybody, let alone a 37-year-old. And she looked better here than she did in Australia. So she's really committed. I think she realizes that she's not going to play forever. She lost a few years because she had that Sjögren syndrome or something, which gives her body pains, and she wasn't able to put her best forward. But I remember I always followed her because she's one of my favorite players. And even when she lost second round, third round to some no-name, she'd come in and say, people would ask her, are you going to retire? How do you feel? And she said, no, I always feel like a champion. And I would think, come on, get real, Venus, or something. But she's showing us, no, she's capable of doing it. I don't know. Her game can break down more than Serena's. And I mean, it's a curse that she's always going to be compared to Serena. I mean, seven Grand Slams is nothing to be laughed at. But she's had a terrific Wimbledon. And if she stays fit and motivated, I don't know. She could do really well in the US Open too.
She's had, you could say, unexpected consistent run on Grand Slams. We discussed how difficult, how much of a... It's literally like a role that predicting the women's side. So let's look at the semifinalists all together. We have discussed, obviously, the finalists, Muguruza and Venus. The other two, what would you want to chime in with that?
Oh, I think Konta surprised everyone. Obviously, the British press was gaga over her. And they built her up, even though the poor girl has only won one match at Wimbledon before this tournament. But I will say, I was really impressed by her. She was so mentally tough. I mean, so many matches, so many games, she'd be under pressure. I mean, against that match, against Wawrinka's girlfriend, Bekic, she won 10-8 in the third set. And then the quarterfinals, the match against Halep, quarterfinals, I think, she played superbly. I mean, she won, you know, in the first set against Halep, she made 23 of 24 first serves. And she still lost the set because Halep was so good at returning. But she lost the set. She didn't even get down for a minute. She came back even better. And I have to think she will win Wimbledon. If she plays like this, she kind of feeds off the crowd. I think it's a matter of maybe 1 or 2 years where she will be a Wimbledon champion if she stays healthy, of course, all the usual caveats. Halep did very well. But now people are saying, oh, she lost at the French final and she lost here too. She can't cross the hurdle. But I think we need to give her a little bit of time. She did well. I mean, a lot of people losing like that in Paris after having so many chances could have gone to pieces. But she didn't. She kind of regrouped. She played well. She was beaten. She didn't lose. Somebody beat her. So there's no disgrace in that. And Halep will definitely win a Grand Slam. I think that's pretty sure. She's tremendously fit. All these players are fit, but she's super fit. They keep talking about how she runs miles and then she's completely ready for the next point. The other players are, you know, catching their breath. Yeah. So who was the fourth semifinalist?
Name just seems to slip me though. Even I don't seem to recollect who it
was. Venus beat Konta. And yeah.
Even I can't
tennis, yeah.
But Konta versus Halep, contender for the match of the tournament. For me, it was the match of the tournament, personally.
Yeah, I think there are two matches that are contenders. One is Konta versus Halep, and the other one is Muguruza versus Kerber. Excellent.
That was really good. But Konta, yeah, just coming back to, as you said, that first set was one of the best sets I've seen this year, actually.
Yeah, I would say. Okay, Muguruza beat Rybarikova, the Slovak, who kind of just 6-1, 6-1. That was completely one-sided. Okay.
No wonder we didn't remember.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, not much to remember.
It would have finished before we started watching it.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, you're right. That absolute top-caliber tennis. I mean, that match alone made the tournament for me, though. That women's match alone. The men's side was pretty low on drama, I'll say. Even though they were five-setters, like Murray lost in five sets, but the moment he dropped the fourth set, the moment he started not being able to move, you knew that there's no way he was going to win that match. And it just kind of went through very quickly. And
I think overall the women's side actually dominated the men's side this time in terms of Wimbledon. Not only like having the best quality matches, in general it was far more competitive, I believe. Yeah, Federer won, great 8th Wimbledon, all those things are great. But as you said, sometimes it looked ridiculously easy, nothing taking away from Federer. But let's stick to the women's side. So would you agree that the women's side was far more competitive this year in terms of quality of matches?
And right from the beginning. The women's side had so many good matches, so many close matches. It was every day there were two or three good matches. The men's side did not have that. It was, I mean, the favorite destroyed everyone he played, and nobody else kind of stepped up. Two of his main challengers were injured. So yeah, it was hands down. I mean, the men's side was only historic. It wasn't memorable for anyone except Federer and his fans, which is still a lot of people. But from a tennis point of view, there wasn't anything great.
Interesting, interesting. And also, I don't know if you did follow the doubles. Hingis, another Grand Slam. Perfect weekend, you could say, for the Swiss. Federer, yes. With Hingis. Hingis with Jamie Murray, right?
Exactly, yeah. So she's winning here 20 years after she won the singles in 97. I mean, she's also won another doubles here. She's got 22 titles, I think, in Grand Slams. Doubles, mixed doubles, and singles. So she's a... And she's still only like, what, 37 or something, right? So, yeah, that was a good one. The men's doubles was incredibly close. I'm not even going to try to say their names, but it was like 4 hours and 50 minutes. They went 11 all, and then they had to stop the match while they closed the roof. And then it finally finished a little while after that. But that was an incredible match. I just caught the last half an hour of it. It was very tight, but it was a good match.
Indeed. So, we've looked at Wimbledon. So, where do the champions head from here? Any news? What Federer, is he going to play? I'm assuming he's going to indeed play the US Open, which means that he's going to play the pre-tournies. So, is he automatically favorite in US Open, or what do you think? US Open, for me, has been the Open where lots of other, you could say, outsiders get chances to win. Right from Safin, Marat Safin, that's the Open which throws up surprises personally for me. So what do you think of, I know it's at least a month away minimum, if not more. I'm not sure of the schedule. So, but is Federer early favorites, or do you think that surface always throws up surprises?
Federer is definitely the early favorite. He's already been installed as the bookmaker's favorite. He's not playing, there are two tournaments before the US Open. There's Montreal and Cincinnati. He has said that he's not going to play Montreal, but he always plays Cincinnati because it's a very fast hard court. And you know, Federer on a fast court. He's won it 7 times, so he's probably already favorite there as well. But right now, Federer is the favorite for the US Open. He's had very consistent results. This year has been incredible for him. But what we have to remember is that last year he was injured. And even an injured Federer, he still made the semifinals of the two Grand Slams he played. And the year before that, he was only losing to Djokovic in the slams. And everybody knows how well Djokovic was playing. So it's not as if Federer has had to up his level. The most amazing thing is that at this age, he's lost no motivation. He's lost no speed. And he's able to take a 6-month break and come back fitter, faster, and better. So I don't think Djokovic and Murray will play the US Open. I expect one or maybe both of them to be injured or recovering. I don't know how severe the injuries are, but just a prediction based on what the news people are saying nowadays. Nadal will be there, but Nadal is kind of blow hot, blow cold at the US Open. Sometimes he does very well, but there's a lot of people who can do well. I would say Federer is definitely the favorite, and he will be the favorite. Nothing is going to change between now and the beginning of the US Open, which is it starts near the end of August, actually.
So you think one of Murray or Djokovic is definitely out, if not both?
Yeah, Djokovic started talking about taking some time off, and he said that his injury he's had it for a year and a half. So I have to believe that it's quite a serious injury. And now that he's given up all his 4 crowns, he has no reason to come back immediately until he gets healthy. And they all can be inspired by Federer. So you take a little bit of time to get better. And these top guys are professional enough that they will do the work, they will do the practice. They're not going to just lounge around and watch TV or something. So they will do what it takes to get back up. And their games are so well-tuned that it will not take that much for them to come back if they choose to. When they choose to, not if they choose to. Federer has huge incentive in New York. He can realistically get 20 slams. Plus, he has no points from now to the end of the year to defend. So he's one of the strong favorites to become a world number one at the end of the year as well.
Ooh, that's a big call. You think he has enough points on offer to catch up?
Yeah, like I said, he didn't play after Wimbledon last year. So basically...
Yeah, so there's no base effect.
Everything from here is bonus for him.
Indeed, indeed. And do you think it's, again, pointless talking about the women's side?
Yeah, I mean... Oh, I wanted to mention one thing. That Ostapenko did really well in the women's side. I watched a few of her matches, and I was wondering how she would play now that she was, you know, a Grand Slam champion. Not much changed. She was still going for her shots. She lost a very close two-setter to Venus Williams. I mean, Venus was in
Iris,
control.
Iris was.
But Ostapenko was hitting winners all the time, and she's got the kind of game that will unsettle a lot of people. I mean, people who are not very confident about their games will get scared by her, because you cannot predict, oh, this is she's going to do this pattern, she's going to play safe, no chance. So I think she did very well. Quarterfinals, she should be very proud.
Ostapenko, one point I wonder, do you think it's, okay, it happened in French, so there is no disputing the fact that it is possible, but do you think her, you could say, high-risk, high-reward game can sustain a Grand Slam? We've seen it happen in French. Do you see it happening again is my question.
Yes, because her first three rounds, I think she had 2 3-setters. Her game was not working perfectly. Like she, with the high risk, she was making errors. But so she kind of tweaked it a little bit here and there to do what it took to win the match. So if she's that smart, then I really think she I don't know. I'm echoing what Chris Evert and others are saying. She could be a mega star. I mean, it's very early. It's too early. Two slams is just a very small sample size. But she really impressed me at Wimbledon, the way she kind of coped with all the attention, and she continued to play the way she wanted to play. And losing to Venus, there's no shame in that.
And talking of stars and all, Kvitova?
Kvitova and Azarenka are both in the same boat, I think. Everybody was happy to see them come back, but now they just need match play. They need to get back into the grind. Their bodies have to get used to playing tennis. And then they can come back and compete at the same level. I think Azarenka had a good tournament. Her match against Watson was good. But I knew then that once that match went to three sets, someone was telling me she probably won't make the tournament. We said it, I think, in our midweek thing, that she won't have enough energy to go all the way through. And she lost to Halep. Kvitova, fine. I mean, it's way too early for her also. Yeah, she has to play a few tournaments, get into matches. And we say matches, but it's not just the matches, but the way they prepare for a match, the way they recover after a match, all that, their body has to get used to that again. But since they played here, since they both seem healthy again, and Azarenka, I mean, she's got the baby and all that stuff, but she seems to be managing that. I think they can do well at the US. They can do well for the rest of the year onward. I mean, they're both motivated. Everything is there.
Good to hear. Any other bits of topics or any other topics specific to Wimbledon you wanted to discuss, Shankar? Because I'm done with whatever I had in mind. So anything you want to throw up, you want to discuss?
I just wanted to... The one thing we didn't talk about was the new world number one in women's tennis. It was Pliskova.
Russian roulette.
Yeah, we lost in the second round. That gave her a world number one ranking. So I don't know how she feels. But again, she's good. Like, I'm not predicting her what she's going to do here. Women's tournament, I'm still not going to predict too much. If Muguruza does well, then we can start saying that she's beginning to be consistent and dominant. But who knows, right? Women's tennis, you just keep your money in your wallet and watch the games. Don't bet a dollar on any of them.
Do you think, irrespective of whoever it is, they are warming, just keeping the throne warm? Do you think Serena is coming back anytime?
I think Serena will come back, but I don't think it's guaranteed that she'll come back at the same level. I mean, having a baby is a big thing.
Nothing is too big for Serena, though.
Yeah, nothing is too big for Serena, but she's having a baby later in her age. She's older than Azarenka was. And so, again, you don't know how it'll affect her, how it'll affect her motivation. I mean, if ever there was a person who didn't need to win a Grand Slam, it's Serena. So, and I think the rest of the tour will be collecting money and telling Serena, no, you just stay at home, watch the baby. We'll take care of the tennis. You just sit at home and watch it. So, but if she comes back, she's like Federer. She won't come back to play. She'll come back to win. And then who's going to bet against her?
There's no betting against Serena. Indeed. So, Shankar, in last bits before we conclude, you have said Federer is the favorite for US Open. As usual, the woman said we are not going to talk about it. So, last thoughts. As you said, match of the tournament, we did say the two women side. So, if you had to pick the match of the tournament from the men's side, what would be? I hope you're not going to say Nadal Muller, but anything else?
It is going to be Nadal Muller. It's the match of the tournament by a mile from the men's side, at least. That's what I'm saying. It's also the match of the tournament. It's also the upset of the tournament. It's also my most disappointing experience of the tournament. It's a lot of things. That match had to do a lot. But the Cilic Muller match was also very good. One thing I've noticed, there's a trend this year. Nadal Federer met in Australia and they pushed each other to five sets and Federer won a close match. Then in Paris, Nadal came in as the favorite. He dominated everyone. I don't think he even won a set 6-4. The closest was 6-3 in those seven matches. And Wawrinka couldn't stand up to him. And Federer did the same thing here. So these top four guys playing against each other, being so good to beat each other, they have now, when they play against people below them, they are not even being challenged. So I think what Federer said is right. The challenge is, the gauntlet is thrown down to the Dominic teams and the Dimitrovs and the Raonics to, you know, come at these guys. Otherwise, this could go on for another year or so, I think, this dominance.
But one side we are talking this, but the other side, as we talked on the last part, we are actually having players who lack motivation to play in Wimbledon. So we are at like two extremes of, in terms of, if you take motivation as a topic, we are at two extremes. Federer just doesn't want to stop. Nadal just doesn't want to stop. We have players like Tomic who are talking about saying they are bored playing Wimbledon. So where are we heading?
Federer is an outlier. Nadal is an outlier. That's why there are only two of them. And Tomic also, I cannot believe that most tennis players would be unmotivated. I read that interview after Bjorn said what he said about the full interview. I read it. And you do feel more sympathetic for him when you read the interview. He was so scrambled. He took an injury timeout to disrupt the other guy's pattern, which is clearly wrong. He admitted to it. And he was kind of just saying, you know, he's 24 years old and he's already playing his ninth Wimbledon. So that really kind of ran around in my head, that statistic. So it's okay for him to be down a bit. Hopefully he'll find a way to come back. But tennis is, it'll only reward people who put into it, like any other sport, I guess. So more people will be like Federer and will have motivation levels more comparable to Federer and Nadal than they will to Tomic. I don't think we run a risk of more people getting seriously demotivated and carrying on just for, you know, first round losses and that kind of stuff. The big names, the guys like Zverev, okay. Zverev, like, that, yeah, he had a very good tournament. He should have won against Raonic. He was up a set and a break, and he kind of played some bad tennis, but he didn't, that just showed his lack of grass court experience. Now, he could have beaten Raonic. And if he had beaten Raonic, it would have been good to see him play against Federer, because Zverev is a guy who doesn't give up. He really wants to be the best. He's interested in winning small tournaments and making money, and I'm sure, but he's really got his eyes set on the big prizes. And Dominic Thiem is the same way. Nobody thought he would do this well. I didn't think he'd do this well because he had these huge ground strokes. His hands move like four or five times before he hits a shot. I thought he wouldn't have time to play well on grass, but he did. He lost to Burdick, but he played well. So you have guys like that coming along. Hopefully Kyrgios, if he gets fit and he stays motivated like he did for the first half of this year, he will be good. He'll definitely be good at Wimbledon. So there are some guys, I think, once the throne is vacated, somebody will occupy it. And then we'll in 3 years, we'll be like, hey, remember this guy, he's won six slams or something like that.
Before we close, there's some other thing which came up to my mind. So I thought I'll ask you, Shankar. This at least was a debate on the women's side about on-court coaching. So where do you stand on that?
Yeah, I don't think there should be on-court coaching, although it's there. It's rampant on both sides. I think the coaches, I mean, it's very easy to give a signal, you know, like this way, that way, meaning serve this way. The women do it a lot. I think they're going to trial it in the, what's that thing called, the next-gen finals, which are happening before the Barclays finals. They're going to trial that. But I think tennis is best because it's one guy versus one guy. You don't know how a guy will cope. You don't want to bring a team in at that point. I mean, he's done his stuff. He's come on court. Even in boxing, you have a corner. But tennis, you don't. I don't think there's any great need to have that in tennis. I mean, you can do away with the let, as far as I'm concerned. And maybe in the final set, you can bring in a tiebreak at 10-all or something like that. But I don't think you need on-court coaching.
Would you be open to on-court coaching if it happens only at the end of the set? Maybe at the end of each set? Because the break is longer than the normal changeovers. Would you be more appreciative of that?
Yeah, that's interesting. That could work. Yeah, that might make... Yeah, because in the end, as the viewing public, what do you want to see? You want to see good matches. So if a coach can come and say something to a guy to get his head better or get her head, and she puts up a better fight, that's fine. I mean, I think, yeah, that's much better than... during the match and all that. That's a good idea.
But the question is also, how do you stop it from happening during the game? That's a totally different aspect to control.
Yeah, I don't think there's any way you can stop it unless you start calling them out. That'll be really embarrassing because a lot of big names get coaching here and there.
Just don't allow the coaches onto the court. Just ask them to be in the locker room. That's the worst you can do.
Yeah, put them play. The players can't see them or something. So they won't talk to their box and their box won't talk back. Yeah, penalize them. But that would be horrible. You want to see the coach and the coaching team react and how they go up and down. So Lendl, you can never tell whether Murray is winning or losing when you look at Lendl's face. So you want to see that. Yeah, I don't know. This is another one of those messy issues. But I don't know if the solution to that is just to say let them all coach. I would like to keep it this way, just, you know, one-on-one, play against each other. But this idea of yours that you just said, a coach at the end of the set, just to give him a two-minute pep or just small tips, that could really work.
Let's see where this does it. So, about to close out, Shankar, anything last bits you want to add or are we done?
I think we're done. It was a historic Wimbledon for Federer. It was a kind of underwhelming on the men's side.
Eight Wimbledon, 11 finals.
8, 11, 19, yeah, all the numbers. I mean, yeah, the first time he's done it at a slam since the 2007 Australian Open. So the clock has turned back, apparently.
Oldest in the Open era, right?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Atharash, yeah. He beat that Atharash record.
Yeah, he beat that, yeah. So he's the oldest Grand Slam winner. And he can probably break this record at the US Open in 2 months.
he even said he thinks he can play till 40, though.
Yeah, he gave a guarded response. Now he's very measured. He said he's only looking 1 year ahead. He says he doesn't know what he's going to do, but he's going to play a smaller schedule. He's not going to play 27 tournaments. He's going to play 18 tournaments. But he's like Steffi Graf. He's good enough. He can play 10 tournaments and probably win them all. So he has not lost to a player ranked in the top 100 this year. Both his defeats came to players ranked outside the top 100. So if you want to beat Federer, you have to let your ranking drop before you play him. So that's the rule now.
Yeah. So let's see. We'll hopefully catch up very soon. Maybe look at Cincinnati, maybe as a precursor to US Open. But till then, I hope you have enjoyed the show. Any feedback or any questions you want to ask, please drop a note. We'll be obviously in the tweet from Anfield Index channel. We'll be having both our Twitter IDs. So any questions, anything you want to discuss tennis, please do drop us a note. But till next time, goodbye. See you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.